January 2020 was my 50th birthday, and my parents flew over from the UK, and along with my closest friends, we had a wonderful party in Gentle Annie in Karamea. While they were here, there was a bit of a buzz about this new virus, and my dad was quite worried because they were flying back through Asia. But they managed to get back to the UK on the 28th of January with no hitches. That was good. Over the next week or so, I found myself reading BBC News more than usual. What had started as a trickle became a torrent of stories. And then on social media, all my med school friends in the UK started to post. And what they were posting was truly dreadful. The various societies and organisations I'm a member of started sending out advice for what to do as a doctor. And there was an email alert set up so that you could get all new papers on COVID sent directly to your email, and I pored over these. And then on the 28th of February, the first case happened in New Zealand. The hospital hierarchy went into high alert. There were working groups. There were frantic daily meetings with the ministry. There were clinical sessions. You come out of a meeting to go and tell your colleagues what the new plan was to find the plan had already changed. Perspex was put up everywhere. There were webcams everywhere. All the computers were primed so that we could work from home. All breast, bowel and cervical screening was cancelled, and all patient and staff travel was cancelled. Conversations with patients were changing too. I'm a cancer surgeon, and I started adding, assuming nothing changes, to my conversation. What I've learnt with what I do is that certainty and having a plan is key. And this was the most uncertain of times. No longer could I not even tell them when I was going to do their surgery. I couldn't even tell them when I might know. I had one 31-year-old who had breast cancer. I was due to operate in Wellington at the Hutt 1 week later, and I started to hold my breath to see if I'd be allowed to do her. When we do breast-conserving surgery, we use radiotherapy. Now, that means you have to travel to Christchurch, so that was now off. So all I could do was a mastectomy, and only for the youngest and most aggressive cancers. So I managed to get to Hutt. It was the 23rd of March, 2 days before level four. On the 21st of March, the first case in Nelson happened. And on the 27th of March, we had the dubious honour of being the first place in the country to intubate a patient with COVID and put them in ICU. I got on that plane, and it was eerie, just as Steve says. There were 15 people on the plane, including the crew. We all had masks on. Nobody touched anybody. I arrived at the hospital, and I stood 2 metres apart from my plastic surgical colleague and friend while we had coffee. We didn't hug. We didn't touch the patient unless we were gloved and scrubbed. And when I flew home that day, I knew that all of my operating was cancelled for the foreseeable future. I spent the rest of the week ringing people up and explaining that I was cancelling their cancer surgery. Those over 80 and those who had pre-cancer, that was okay, but the rest were unbelievably difficult conversations. Acute patients were still coming in, but they came in late and they came in sicker because they were scared and they had to be alone. A third of the people that came in with appendicitis during lockdown, I had to do an open operation on. Now, this is routinely a keyhole surgery, so much so that my junior staff don't know how to do an open appendix. Two patients, I had to take half their bowel out. One of them, I put them in intensive care for appendicitis. People were too scared to stay in hospital. They insisted they were fine when they had high fevers. And we had a list on the ward where every day we would ring them up to check they were still okay because we were so clinically uncomfortable. I personally told at least half a dozen people they were either dying or critically unwell on their own. I remember a young woman who had tears streaming down her face. I put her husband on speakerphone so he could hear the news. And I promised I'd ring him every day, and I gave him my number. But every instinct meant I wanted to sit on her bed. I wanted to hold her hand. I wanted to hug her. And I wasn't allowed. And it wasn't okay. We split into pods, and that was so that if one of us got sick, we could swap over. And if you were the on pod, you spent long hours in the hospital. I came home from those days with disinfectant wipes in the car, and I wiped the steering wheel and the handles. And then I had a diluted spray of mess, which I sprayed my phone outside the back door. I then stripped to my underwear in the back garden, which was disconcerting because I hadn't got round to fixing the fences. And my husband would open the door. I would go straight to the shower before I touched anybody. My children were kind of mortified by the 50-year-old body that was semi-naked going across the lounge. But there was some humour. You know, I did clinics from home, and I mastered screen sharing so I could show you mammograms and scans. But I always draw diagrams, and I was trying to draw them backwards and point at them on the computer, and I'm not very spatially aware. And I had at least two partners who had to hold laptops while women had flapped their arms up and down. And I tried to see if the cancer was tethered to their breast or not, or to their skin. And it was like, it's like some kind of weird lame porno. I'd commandeered my daughter's room, and people could see her sporting certificates and sort of drawings on the wall. And on more than one occasion, the dogs battered the door open and joined in the consultation, which was actually quite human, so that was good. But we were the lucky ones. Me and my colleagues watched what happened in Europe. We saw the tide go out. And we'd taken an oath, and we were committed, but we were also aware that when the tsunami came, we were going to drown. And yet we stood there as one, resolute. And I have never been more proud of all my co-workers in healthcare across the entire world. I don't know if New Zealand knows how close it came to disaster, but what I do know is that 2020 was one of the hardest but the luckiest years of my life as a doctor. I am eternally grateful to the government and the team of 5 million who have undoubtedly saved tens of thousands of lives of New Zealanders. And amongst those are hundreds of people who would have been my colleagues and friends, and maybe even me. So thank you.